When the news gets complicated, you need better questions.
It's just a fact that Tony Fauci, not the guy I'm talking with, but Tony Fauci, the person in people's mind, is now an impediment to public health because people won't listen to you.
You know, with all due respect, I just completely disagree with that premise because there are an awful lot of people who do listen, who do the right thing from a public health standpoint.
Hugh Hewitt. Weekdays 2 to 4 on News Radio 92.3. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Tonight it's very clear as we're both lying here. There's so many things I want to say.
Speakers are asked to refrain from abusive or profane remarks, disruptive outbursts.
See, come that's on. The problem. Your forked tongue gets you in trouble. Just like,
no,
you
it make does not.
If you don't know who I am, close your mouth. Something's going to fly in your mouth.
You're going to have to be quiet when I'm talking. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do the insubordination.
This is not transparent, open government.
I have never said you were psychotic, though you may be.
I don't know that I care for the narrative.
Well, Stephen, I certainly didn't mean to hurt your feelings or anybody else's, or to imply that any one of us is not doing what...
I'm not a maiden who needs to be saved from my feelings.
Wonderful, thank you.
Love can touch us one time and last for a lifetime.
And I guess for capital outlay, you could use LOST dollars if the board so...
Yes, sir, that is correct. So when the voters approved the referendum, the general fund was never to be included as a funding source for the Bay Center.
Never intended, but it's allowable by statute.
No, sir.
It's not allowable.
Correct. As it relates to the Bay Center, we had a voter referendum, and we have an ordinance on the books.
I always love how Commissioner Lumen May, you know, he can hear you tell him a thing, and if he wants to do the opposite, he will push back to see if there's any way maybe he can just do it anyway. Like when, you know, we were talking last week about the whole issue with, you know, but is it legal? Well, you know, I strongly recommend you don't do it that way. Well, but, you know, can I? That's the same thing he's doing here with... the director of the budget, Stephen Hall. Basically, what he's being told is that when voters passed, and you know what? I tried to research this, so if I get a piece of this wrong, I apologize, because I did not remember this part, and so it was new to me also from Stephen Hall. But I think what he means is that when we passed the local option sales tax referendum the last time around, that there was language that we would not be able to use LOST dollars on the Bay Center. And so it has to come from, or that it could not come from general fund money. Sorry. I think that's the meaning. And so it has to be from somewhere else. I could be wrong. Like I said, I really did. I spent about 20 minutes trying to figure out what he was talking about yesterday, looking up old articles and things. But in any case, we're not using LOST or general fund money. We're using TDC money, or TDT, sorry. TDC is the council. TDT is the actual taxes. That's from, you know, the 5 cents that you pay whenever you, or 5% that you pay every time you stay at a hotel. A fifth cent of that, which was specifically passed for the Bay Center funding. In any case, I just thought it was an interesting note that, you know, that's not available to spend on this. There were a lot of weird, interesting notes yesterday. This is in the morning meeting, the committee of the whole, when they were talking about the Bay Center specifically. I did not watch the, 6 hours, I think it was, last night meeting. I mean, it was still going on, and I was going to bed, and I go to bed late, like you might not know, but like I stay up very, very late. Usually, I just don't get a lot of sleep all at one time. But yeah, including the public comments, it was 5 hours and 54 minutes. So, good Lord, but I knew that was going to happen, right? When you've got OLF-8 on the agenda, when you've got data centers, the third version of the ban that already exists, as if, you know, well, we banned them. No, they're already banned. whatever. Different, and flock cameras and all the, you know, all the hair colors you could possibly want. Not exaggerating. You should watch the meeting. Anyway, I watched just enough to know that. But back to the conversation about the Bay Center, what to do about that. Lumen May said he was talking with D.C.
So I'm in full disclosure, I had a great conversation with the mayor this morning. So I understand nothing's binding. So do we anticipate having further discussions with all of the entities that are going to participate. I mean, because, you know, I've long said that, you know, school board, if we're going to talk about graduations, if we're going to talk about state tournaments, I mean, they should be a partner in the equity participation, not just the decision-making participation.
We've not spoken with school board. We have met with the city, the mayor and his staff. It was a pretty decent meeting, I think, and shared some of our thoughts and ideas of where we're headed and how our methodology, how we're going to get there.
Now, that's an interesting note, and here's why. Lumen is saying, you know, hey, I mean, the school board uses the school district uses the Bay Center. Maybe they can contribute a little bit, which, especially given the possibility of the property tax referendum, you know, and the school board's going to keep all their funding, and even for students who don't go to the school district anymore. You know, because property taxes don't go down just because enrollment goes down. It should, but it doesn't. Anyway, you know, so that's an interesting note. And then basically Wes Moreno says, no, the only person I've talked to with about all this is D.C. And by the way, this whole issue of the interlocal agreement, if you didn't watch the meeting, you know what I'm talking about. The city and the county were working on an interlocal agreement related to the Bay Center. There's a pretty good reason for it, which is the fact that the county does not own the land, and they do not control the lease, and they have to get permission from the city and actually from FDOT, but more on that in a minute. And so, of course, we're involved in an interlocal agreement and negotiating it. It doesn't get enacted until the county commissioners enact it, but there was this sudden brouhaha because all of the commissioners either didn't know or acted like they didn't know anything about this interlocal agreement, and it was suddenly a big moment of drama. I didn't even bother cutting the clips. It was so stupid. They just got all their egos hurt because, you know, Wes and D.C. were working on this interlocal agreement that, again, would have to come back to the county commission anyway, so whatever. Stephen Hall, again, it was an interesting question because there's a requirement for how TDC money gets spent. I think the number is 40% of it has to be spent on promotion. That's, again, bed tax money. But because of the way we define promotion, the Bay Center is promotion. It's not ads, but the Bay Center brings people in, so it's promoting local tourism. So it's a very loose definition of promotion. But it turns out 87% of the money from TDT gets used in some form of promotion. So what are they going to wind up doing? Well, they've got three options. And I am almost certain this is Rob Hogan from Facilities. Sometimes not everybody does a great job identifying speakers, and I don't know him personally, so it's hard to tell. But I believe this is Rob Hogan, and he says there's basically three phases they're talking about. Phase one is the one that everybody agrees needs to be done. That's the Bay Center renovations itself.
It's going to be included. Phase one will be the improvements to the Bay Center, the existing Bay Center building itself. There's interior improvements and exterior improvements listed. We've projected the cost, an escalated cost for 2028, based on the numbers that were provided by Populous in February. So for this project, phase one, we're looking at an estimated cost of $74 million.
Okay, so, and that's not a surprise. I mean, it might, you know, in which year's dollars, okay? So there's a little wiggle on all that. But, you know, $74 million for just turning the Bay Center into what it's supposed to be in order to be a modern venue, not looking like it was in the 80s, having the right kind of seating configuration with a variety of price points, larger capacity for the stage and the size of the shows that can come here. That's been a hiccup to keep us from getting a lot of shows that go elsewhere because we can't handle the, you know, requirements of the larger facility. So that's all, that's everybody agrees. $74 million to make that work, to basically make the Bay Center, which is great bones, terrible skin, just needs, you know, a lot of superficial renovation. Phase two.
Then phase two would be development of the Bay Event Center itself. That cost has gone up. The original cost was 84.4. It's now up to 87.9. That's estimated, escalated 2028 cost.
Okay, so this is the event center where you can have basically conventions, but keep in mind a lot of the conversation about bringing events in is, and some athletic use as well, but it's not, we've talked about having specifically an athletic space, but the convention-ish event center space is really predicated on the idea that you're going to have a hotel that's going to have a ballroom. The ballroom is one of the big limiting factors because you have to be able to have a place where you can have all your people get together in one space, and right now the Hilton out on the beach is the biggest one, and it's just not big enough to handle this, even though the new hotel that's going in on the beach also apparently will not be big enough. But the point is, having a ballroom is essential, but we're assuming that somehow that's going to get solved as well. In any case, phase two, $84 million, that's also, it's not agreed to. It's not decided. That's a maybe, probably, we'd like to, but we're mostly interested in doing that. And then phase three.
Phase three is two options. We have two options there. One is a parking structure, an independent parking structure. And the other option is the ice rink.
Which you might think, those are kind of a weird, you know, left or right choice, right? You know, go this direction, get a parking structure, go this direction, get an ice rink. And the reason for that is not because it's meant to be an either or, but because the footprint that would be the most logical place to put a parking structure would be on the northeast corner of the property, which is 9th and Gregory, and or the southeast portion of the property, which is Chase and Gregory, up against 9th Avenue, basically. Because otherwise, like, and each of those has its own kind of maybe an alternative. The northeast was meant to be the ice rink if they wanted it and could afford it. The southeast was meant to be a hotel if they wanted it and could afford it, or if somebody was willing to build it. When you take both of those out of the equation, you create a lot of possibilities for putting in a parking structure. Or you could do a parking structure at the tech park across the street. Or, well, maybe you could put a parking structure in underneath the event center and then build it on top. I mean, there's some, again, some options here. But the reason they say ice rink or parking is because the footprint for a larger parking structure would be where the ice rink is kind of imagined. All right, so where are you going to have that parking? Well, you know, Mike Kohler asked the question. Again, Rob Hogan explaining.
Do we have a site for the parking structure? Because in the design we never did originally, has that been identified?
The original concept for that was provided to us had a hotel on the Bay Center property. If we're not going to be putting that hotel up and there's no interest in that, we can go and put an independent parking structure there. We've also considered adding one or two decks of parking underneath the event center itself. One deck would conserve the existing parking on the surface. The second deck would add another approximate 100 or 500 parking spots.
Because keep in mind, one of the big challenges here is the surface parking going away on the east side of the Bay Center, like between the Bay Center and 9th Avenue. That means a loss of spaces. But you're talking about, so you got to get those back somehow. And if you have an expanded capacity at the Bay Center, including if you have this athletic or the event center, you need more parking, not less, and you're actually taking parking away to build the greater capacity, which is going in the wrong direction. So how do you solve that problem? Well, I mean, that's and also the expense, because parking structures are expensive. When HCA Florida West built their parking structure behind their building recently, it was $40,000 a space. So, you know, 500 spaces is $20 million. 1,000 spaces is $40 million. It's not cheap to build parking. Very, very expensive. And again, you've got to find a place to do it. Where could they? Well, again, partially the southeast corner, possibly the whole eastern edge.
Okay. So we could do an independent structure out there on the corner of Chase, East Chase, and 9th. Or we could, if we don't proceed with the ice rink, we could make that whole frontage on 9th Street, 9th Avenue there, a parking facility.
So what now is basically open space with a chain link fence across from the Waffle House would potentially be a parking structure, which is kind of a weird visual to put in your head, but you know, I mean, things change in downtown environments. So that's a possibility. Now in the end, by my read, and I may have misunderstood, but by my read, there weren't any big decisions made. It was, yes, we definitely want to do phase one and renovate the Bay Center. We would like to be able to do, but we're not sure, especially with the pending property tax referendum. Not that TDC and property tax money are fungible towards each other, but that, you know, that's changing our whole equation of how we think about government funding. And, you know, and also some uncertainty about all the other elements, like the hotel, like the ice rink-ish, like the big ballroom, like what's going on with the Grand Hotel, like what is the city willing to do and who's willing to put in, and, you know, how are these facilities going to be configured? Again, every time we talk about the Bay Center, there are a lot of what-ifs and uncertainties and possibilities, and there's a lot of conversation where people get frustrated only because it's a very wide-open thing. which to me, and also finding the right partner, you know, to come in and work with us, because we don't really want to necessarily do this ourselves. We'd like to have somebody who sees it as a profitable venture so that they can take not only the management responsibility, but kind of the investment responsibility too, that PPP that you always hear people talking about, like it's a magical formula, private-public partnership. Last little bit on this for now anyway is, never forget that if you're a Democrat, you can always ask if there's a way to raise taxes.
Stephen, can we levy another penny?
Not that
statutorily, or we can't?
Not that I'm aware of.
We can't.
Oh, dang.
So we're at the max of what we can levy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we can't go to a sixth or a seventh cent. And also he followed up by asking, well, you know, you've looked at a lot of other places. Is there any other way we can raise revenue for this somehow or other? And basically, like, there's a lot of limits and, you know, constraints on what government can do in this regard. So not a particularly fulfilling discussion about the Bay Center. I at least did not come away feeling like we definitely had a game plan for yes, one, definitely two, probably not three, or three if this and this and this. Also, some interesting notes about who owns which property and what that means for the eventual. Plus, like I said, the drama that you might hear reported about the, you know, the city and the county engaging in an interlocal agreement, which just means an agreement between two governmental entities about who has responsibility and who has what obligations and what everybody's expecting. It's just kind of a contract between, you know, governments. And the commissioners all either being surprised or pretending to be surprised about the existence of those negotiations, which they did not authorize. I don't know which is the truth, but it doesn't, I don't think it really matters because I don't think it's that surprising. It wasn't hidden. I mean, it was actually on the city council agenda for next week. So it's not like they were doing this in secret. Anyway, 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has a great selection of good quality used cars, cars that are a year to 3 years, young, four maybe, okay, 10 to 30 or maybe 40,000 miles. You're going to be the second owner typically, maybe the third, you know, but I mean, the point is almost new, not brand new. Okay, but almost new. Like our Honda Odyssey that we bought was a year old with 12,000 miles. It was driven around in Orlando. They came back to the dealership, pre-owned certified off of a lease for 1 year. For whatever reason, they couldn't sell it. So they have a pretty strict policy there at this particular dealership. Everything goes right back into sales if it's at 90 days or goes into auction. So it was a pre-owned certified that we got through not a Honda dealer because it had been listed pre-owned certified, but then, you know, Frontier went down there. They bought it. They brought it here. We bought it, and easy. So we got a great car. We weren't even trying to buy a car. We're just trying to look to drive a car and see if that's what we wanted to get eventually. And they took such good care of us and offered us such a good deal. I thought, well, you know, we kind of have to buy it. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
You're great at protecting your data, but lots of places could still expose you to identity theft.
I thought it was safe.
If that happens, LifeLock gives you a U.S.-based restoration agent who will stick by your side from start to finish. Phone calls, filing documentation, preparing insurance claims, your agent handles it all. In fact, we're so confident, restoration is guaranteed, or your money back. Isn't it nice to have someone like that on your side? Save up to 30% with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Hi, this is DC Reeves. Together, we are moving Pensacola in the right direction. My priorities are building a healthy economy with good careers and keeping our community safe. I will always support our small businesses and back the blue. Let's keep working as a team to move Pensacola forward. I'm DC Reeves, and I'd be honored to have your vote on August 18th.
DC Reeves is endorsed by Sheriff Chip Simmons and the Fraternal Order of Police. Paid for by DC Reeves for mayor.
This is the story of the one. The one who keeps multiple buildings running smoothly day after day. Plumbing that flows, HVAC that hums, cleaning supplies that keep surfaces sparkling. That's why she counts on Grainger. With easy reordering online and 24/7 support, Grainger helps her keep the products she needs on hand. So shelves stay stocked and buildings stay ready. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Got a question about business, health, or money?
Chances are Meg's already talking to the expert.
Pet Talk, Pensacola Expert Panel, weekdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Look, Bill, if this is about reliving the 60s, you can forget about it, buddy. The movement is dead.
Yes, of course, hence the name. Movement, it moves a certain distance, then it stops, you see? A revolution gets its name by always coming back around in your face.
I ain't trying to...
Tommy Lee Jones is a treasure. Yeah, even if it's in what you must acknowledge is at best a C-grade movie, Under Siege. Yes, it's on board a battleship. Yes, it's got Erika Leniak. And yes, it's got a birthday cake involving Erika Leniak. But it's still Gary Busey. I mean, it's not a great movie, but and Steven Seagal. But it's, you know, it's still Tommy Lee Jones, and he's fantastic. 529 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. What else do we have going on? Well, like I said, there was this enormously long meeting last night that, I knew I was going to be off next week. And by the way, I've got a bunch of really good people filming for me next week, including, Colton Wright and Jennifer Harrison is going to be here. And we got Jonathan Owens is going to fill in with Josh Newby next Friday. That's going to be a good time. I mean, when they fill in before, it was great. Walker Wilson, Colton's first time. He was in yesterday kind of observing, and he's going to have he's going to be so much fun. Anyway, you'll have a good time with them next week. What else do we have going on? 437-1620, 437-1620. President Trump, some people, I'm willing to be critical of President Trump whenever he deserves it. This ending of birthright tourism and putting restrictions in on who gets citizenship based on being born here, it's easy to read this as the Supreme Court told him no and he wanted to hear it as a yes anyway. I actually don't read it that way. If you read Kavanaugh's concurrence, okay, especially if you read Kavanaugh's concurrence, but if you look at the reasoning behind what the Supreme Court said about, birthright citizenship, I think he's trying to find around the margins and the harder or weirder cases, like with people who work for foreign governments or people who are, members of foreign adversaries but aren't actually declared combatants. Like some of, and the birth tourism stuff. I think he's actually trying to do something the Supreme Court might be allowing.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop. A multi-million-dollar judgment against a social media behemoth.
$567 million Meta is required to pay will go to an abatement fund. It will be used for the treatment of young people who are harmed by social media, as well as prevention, screenings, and evaluations.
Fox's Matt Rivera, the money is on top of a $375 million penalty in March during an earlier phase of this case. Longtime U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn up for a new job.
We absolutely have to unite as a party and defeat the Democrats.
She captures the Republican Tennessee primary for governor. She faces Democrat Jerry Green in November. Republican Carson Andy Ogles loses his primary challenge to Charlie Hatcher. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 78 degrees with clear skies. We're going to get a look at our forecast here in just a few minutes. Congressman Jimmy Patronis wants to build a new National Veterans Cemetery on about 200 acres at Eglin Air Force Base. Patronis says roughly 100,000 veterans call Northwest Florida home. Right now the closest options are either Pensacola or Tallahassee. A steering committee, including former County Commissioner Graham Fountain, will choose the exact site. Work could begin in September. Patronis says funding will have to cover land clearing, irrigation, and utilities before construction can move forward. Milton's police chief is asking for more money in the city budget to raise wages for officers and dispatchers. Chief Jennifer Frank says current pay is lagging behind neighboring agencies. She's requesting an 8.25% increase, adding up to $5,000 a year to salaries. Councilwoman Marilyn Farrow did say it's the first time in years she's heard the department ask for more funding. Two more budget hearings remain before the council votes on a final budget. Well, Sheriff Chip Simmons has honored 21-year-old pilot Emily Shelton for her handling of the emergency landing on I-10 near Davison Scenic Highways this week. Shelton received the Sheriff's Medal after deputies say her calm and quick decisions helped her to safely land that aircraft and avoid a more serious outcome. It's the emergency landing that shut down part of I-10 earlier this week. A union representing TSA officers is suing the Transportation Security Administration, saying it wants more information about plans to privatize passenger screening at the Tampa airport and two other airports. The union's general counsel, Rishab Sanghvi, says the TSA hasn't been transparent about the process.
They're the ones who are supposed to make the request on whether or not the airport should convert to this Gold Plus. And we still don't know when they made that application, how they made that application.
The lawsuit claims that the TSA didn't respond to a Freedom of Information Act request seeking records on the program. Tampa International says using private screeners could help avoid disruptions during future government shutdowns. Well, controversial surveillance cameras are being vandalized in Central Florida. People appear to be targeting Flock cameras in Volusia and Lake counties. The most recent reported incident took place this week in Port Orange, where somebody cut down a Flock camera. Local news there reports that cameras have also been cut down in Claremont, DeBary, and Austin. Some people think Flock cameras are an invasion of privacy. Law enforcement officials, though, say that they are only used to help solve active investigations. It is 5:35 at News Radio 92.3. Right now, 78 degrees with clear skies. Let's get a look at our forecast from Channel 3.
We are going to be seeing a beautiful summertime day today with a 20% chance of rain. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 89. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 78. For Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a 20% chance of rain, high near 90 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 79. Heading into Sunday, a 30% chance of some pop-up showers and thunderstorms. Otherwise, mostly sunny, high near 89 degrees. Stay connected. Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
78, clear skies, our next news. In 30 minutes and breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Nicole Murray with your money now. A judge in New Mexico has ordered Meta to pay $567 million after a jury ruled that the company willfully violated the state's Unfair Practices Act. The judge ruled that Meta's platforms are contributing to the current mental health crisis among New Mexico's youth. The determination is tied to a child safety case against Meta. LGBTQ-focused dating platform Grindr said it is using AI to develop new premium subscription products and improve back-end tools. Grindr is testing pricing for its AI-powered Edge Companion, including in New York, where it costs as much as $350 per month. Advanced Micro Devices has agreed to acquire Talus, a startup that makes chips for inference. Talus's technology promises a less expensive chip that it says can produce output for specific models thousands of times faster than a traditional GPU. Futures are mixed as traders await the big jobs report. NASDAQ futures up by more than 100 points. That's your money now.
Building-related illnesses. We get a lot of calls for this. Who do you know that is sick from the building they're in? Hi, this is Todd with Gulf Coast Air Care. Building-related illness symptoms include coughing, sneezing, headaches, itchy, watery eyes, and a host of breathing problems. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we have the solution. We can inspect, clean, and treat your AC system so you'll feel great. If you have dust issues or health problems that you feel are related to your home or office building, you should give us a call. We'll share the tips and secrets you need to know for a comfortable, healthy indoor environment. Gulf Coast Air Care is at 850-934-2768. Our service will extend the life of your air conditioner and your system will be much more energy efficient too. Let us help you by cleaning the most neglected system in your home or workplace. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we take pride in the certifications and the licenses that we hold. If you want the best quality and award-winning customer service, you can find us on the web at gulfcoastaircare.com.
Edit, Sarah.
Serious cleaning, Gulf Coast Air Care.
4 years ago, Kerry Smith made three promises. Roads before development, fair impact fees, and rewriting our land development code. He's kept every single one. Kerry steered $60 million in roadway capacity projects, breaking ground this summer. Kerry alone championed impact fees, so new growth pays its fair share. Rewrote the land development code twice to protect our neighborhoods from flooding. Kerry continues to work with FDOT to four-lane Highway 90 through downtown Milton. Promises made, promises kept. Political advertisement paid for and approved by Kerry Smith, Republican for Santa Rosa County Commissioner, District 2.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
The midterm elections. Who will win? Who will not?
One question about the 2026 races is already answered.
It'll all be covered on News Radio 92.3.
Campaign 2026.
This is where the fun begins.
Every step, every day.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
On News Radio 92.3. Informative.
Informative.
trust, local, dependable.
Good morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Great to have you with us this morning. On the phone is Mike Wood, the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. So the big news incident that took place, I think it was yesterday, is you guys were investigating a very unusual shooting in Pensacola Village there at Davis and Fairfield, right?
Yeah, so what the confusion seems to be, it was a shooting. It was a single shot fired at Pensacola Village. The round, when it hit a concrete or brick or whatever it was, there were several juveniles standing very close to that. And when a bullet hits concrete or something else that's hard, it's going to go into a lot of pieces, and so is the concrete or the structure that it hit. And that is what injured those juveniles. None of them were struck by the bullet itself, so all the injuries were minor. And that case is still progressing, and we hope to have an arrest very soon.
Okay, so it was one bullet. It did not hit any of the four juveniles, but the concrete that got damaged was shrapnel, essentially, and the concrete affected them. I thought, didn't one or two of them wind up in the hospital?
I don't know if they stayed. I know that there were three that went to the hospital for treatment. There was a fourth that was discovered in an apartment at Pensacola Village that did end up getting treatment as well. But I don't know if any of them stayed overnight, if that's what you're asking.
Well, I'm just trying to get a sense of it. Look, a bullet flying by a juvenile, I care about that on its own. But, you know, the injuries, it's hard for me to imagine the injuries being more than basically scrapes from, you know, or I mean, if it got in somebody's eye, I could see that be an issue. But I'm trying to get a grasp on how serious the injuries were, and it's hard for me to make sense of them being all that serious to justify a hospital trip. But you tell me.
Well, I mean, anytime if I'm a parent and my child is near a bullet or shooting and comes home bleeding, then that's the first thing I'm going to do as well. And I think that's what's happened, which is exactly what you should do.
Okay.
And let the medical professionals decide how serious it is. But what I'm told on the injuries, none of them were even close to life-threatening. So that's the great news about this. The bad news is another shot was fired. So we're taking care of that end of it as well.
At this point, does it look to be random, targeted, don't know, can't say?
Don't know.
Okay.
We'll say, just don't know at this point.
Well, and I mean, I know sometimes you know and can't say for, you know, investigatory reasons, so it doesn't bother me. The other thing is, and I just want, you had put up a very interesting post on your Facebook page where you know, as we all know, social media does not always get 100% of the facts 100% of the time. And in this case, the reports were, did you see the 10 people that got killed in Pensacola Village with a single shot the other night or something like that? Is that right?
Andrew, this is what keeps me up at night. It makes me pull out what hair I have left when I read things like that. It is so, and people lock onto it. That's a lot of young people in the community look to social media to get their information, and it is so wrong. So the only thing that we can do is exactly what we've been doing, and that's why I sent out those text alerts to you guys the second something's going on and give you what information I do have to set the record straight, to hopefully you guys will get it out. We will get it out on our social media. Chief Winstrom has come in and made some changes to our social media, mostly our Facebook page, to make sure information is put out quicker so that people know where to go to get the information. So go to reputable news sources, go to our Facebook page, go to our X or Twitter or our X now, and we will get you that information a lot faster and more accurate.
What? How much of your time? I know that scouring social media for investigatory purposes is actually super useful for the police, but social media, how much of your time is spent combating, responding to, fixing the problems created by the errors and shares on social media?
Well, a lot of it is spent monitoring. I've got what's called TweetDeck in my office, where I'm looking all the time at information that's coming through about or comments on what we are doing, and that's all that we can control. And if I see something that looks like it's going to grow legs and take off, and in other words, get very popular and start getting lots of clicks, then that's something that we will respond to. We're not going to respond to, you know, people, they talk bad about us. We're the police. We understand that. We're going to get that. We're not too worried about that. But when somebody puts out information that 10 people were killed at Pensacola Village or any place else, when that's not even close to the truth, then that's something we will absolutely respond to very quickly.
National Night Out was yesterday, last week? Now all of a sudden I just cannot remember. When was it?
It was Tuesday.
Tuesday, okay. And at Washington High?
Yeah, great weather, good turnout, lots of vehicles and personnel out there to get us closer to the community. That's what it's for. That's why it was created years and years ago, and it went nationwide. And it's a great event for people to come out and be able to see our toys and meet us, and us meet them as well, and answer any questions that they have.
The proposed curfew ordinance that, you know, the mayor is bringing to bear next week, city council is going to vote on it next Thursday for first reading and then second reading. Assuming that it passes, what is the anticipated enforcement plan? It already contains warnings as part of the enforcement. Do you guys plan to do a soft 30-day information campaign like you often do? Do you have a plan for implementation at this point?
Yeah, we want to see how this lands. We want to see how it's going to be worded when it passes. If it passes, we want to make sure all of that is in place. And once it is, then we will start the education part of it. And that's how we always like to do something new, is educate the public and make sure everybody understands what the new law or ordinance is, and then go that way. And after education, then warnings come, and then enforcement after that. And, you know, everybody always says that, why don't you guys do something? You got to do something. Well, the mayor and the city of Pensacola are doing just that, because even though that this people think that this stemmed from the shooting on the 4th of July, that's not exactly right. There were incidences before that at the mall and other places where juveniles are involved, and mostly it's during the summer when school is out. So that is what they are doing, or we are doing, is something about it to hopefully make sure that things, or do our very best to make sure things don't happen in the future that could be horrible, with horrible outcomes.
You know, the more I think about this ordinance and the way it's written, specifically that it's 11 to 5 on weeknights and 12 to 6 on Friday and Saturday, going over into Saturday and Sunday, or starting, you know, midnight on Saturday into early morning. Anyway, I wonder if the ordinance does enough in terms of the time frame. And here's what I'm thinking. The young people who were out on the 4th of July, it was before midnight, unless I'm wrong. I don't think that was after midnight, but you tell me. The Cordova Mall was obviously during business hours, so that wasn't late at night even. Does it deal with them early enough in the day? It doesn't seem like a lot of these things are happening at 1 a.m., but you tell me.
No, it's mostly happening late.
Oh, it is.
So
okay.
We have to start somewhere, and we're going to go start with what we have here, and maybe it has to be adjusted in the future, but we've got to start someplace, and this seems to be a good point to begin this and see how it goes. And again, everything can be adjusted later on if we need to do that.
Are you comfortable? And I know it's not your policy, it's city council's policy, and I know you don't get to make it, they get to vote on it, and it could land anywhere, but though I understand the exemptions and exceptions, there's a part of me that worries that obviously exceptions get twisted for the wrong purposes. Like, you know, it's got an exception for work, which is good. It's got an exception for, you know, religious and other First Amendment activity. I mean, what if juveniles are attending some protest at 2 a.m. or they call it a protest rave? Like, are you comfortable that you guys are still going to be able to enforce it effectively given some of those exemptions?
Well, we'll see. Every case is different. I'm glad there are exemptions, because there are people, put it like this, the ones that are causing problems, they make themselves known very easily.
Okay.
And they're usually not doing any of those, you know, they're not driving someone to the hospital or participating in an activity, an organized activity. It's usually just chaos, and it's easy for us to identify those people, and then we can use this new tool that we have to hopefully prevent that or stop it. And it's the juveniles that are out after hours that are not causing any problems. They're just not on our radar. We don't see them. But like I said, the ones that do that cause issues are easy for us to spot, and then we can do what we have to do.
And I suppose this would also cover, you know, for example, the roving groups or gangs of 13 and 14 and 15-year-olds that are trying car doors, and, you know, you don't have any real enforcement mechanism against them right now, but this would give it to you if they're doing that during the dark, right?
That's exactly right. That's why it's citywide. It's not one specific area, because problems can happen anywhere in the city, and they have. And this is one thing that will help us if we see somebody walking down 12th Avenue at 3 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. A couple of juveniles, and this is a tool that we can use.
And also, as you mentioned, the ones who were throwing, you know, mortar fireworks at each other on Palafox as a part of a game were not likely the same ones that would have been having the 2 a.m. impromptu Bible revival on the street.
So we don't... Most likely. I mean, yeah, that's,
you never know.
Putting it out there, but that's probably not going to be the same person. And, you know, you have to understand, and again, the shooting came up, keeps coming up about this, and that it was an adult. But an hour before the shooting, Chief Winstrom himself got into a foot pursuit with a juvenile that was firing these mortar-type fireworks. And when he caught him, he had a gun in his waistband. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on before this shooting happened as to why that we need a curfew like this.
Very good. One thing, I'm going to share this with you, and you can react however you want to react, but I thought it was interesting. I like when people put two different ideas together in a way I hadn't considered before. Obviously, there's been a lot of conversation about the flock cameras, and certain people are very uncomfortable about them or unhappy about them or whatever. And somebody said, but aren't these folks some of the same ones that have been so defending the public's right to video everything everywhere all the time, including law enforcement officers and the First Amendment auditors? So they want everybody to be able to have cameras all the time everywhere, just not the police?
Yeah, if you see somebody, and we've had some First Amendment auditors and things like that, and if you see them in a city council meeting going against flock, it kind of makes you scratch your head. This is something that is still new. We understand it's been misused all over the country, but it has not been misused in Pensacola, Florida. So give us a shot. Let us fight crime with these things. And if it's misused in Pensacola, Florida, then we have an issue. But until that happens, it's a great tool. It's saving lives. It's getting property back. It's preventing crimes. And we're all for it.
And as you know, I mean, I have my concerns about all of this kind of stuff. But at the same time, the folks bring up these exceptions of, you know, well, this cop misused it over here, or this person misused it over there. And I think, yeah, and how do we know about that? Because they have rules, they broke the rules, they suffer penalties. That sounds like the system working, not the system not working. So my take anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And there's going to be audits. We can't just go in and look at a tag without a case number backing it up. We can't just randomly look for a tag. There's going to be checks and balances and audits and to make sure that system is not misused, because the officers that do misuse it, they need to lose their jobs. They need to lose their pensions. They need to go to jail. And that's all there is to it. So you're going to have people misusing things that there's going to be consequences for it, as there should be.
And also be very cautious judging the whole on the basis of a few bad actors, a few bad behaviors. That's always a bad policy, logically speaking. Myth or cop, did you know? We always like to end with one. Do you have one for me this week?
Yeah, I was asked about this a couple of weeks ago and forgot about it. But how can officers who are working off duty have any police power? And that's a very simple one to answer. The moment an officer is sworn in, they have police powers, they have arrest powers. They don't have to be on a certain clock. But with the good thing about working off duty is it not only does it benefit the officer financially, but the person that hired them or the company that hired them, they have an officer on the spot, on the site, that does not have to leave if they get a call. It benefits the city and the Pensacola Police Department, because it keeps our number one line, which is the patrol officers, free to go answer calls. They don't get tied up with a disturbance at a bar downtown. That's what the off-duty officer is there for. So the officers do have the power of arrest and can do anything that they normally do while they're working off-duty.
The powers to be a police officer or a sheriff's deputy do not flow from the time clock stamp. They flow from the oath and the badge.
Yeah, that's it.
Very so good. Did you ever with your kids ever threaten you'd have to arrest them because you can do that even though they're your dad? You're their dad?
Well, I'd have to pay the fine, so I don't want to do that unless I have to. But smart. Yeah, it's been threatened. I keep telling my son every time he wants to box around with me or slap box, if you hit me, it's a felony. You're not going to be able to vote anymore. So, and it used to work. It doesn't work anymore.
Taking away the right to vote does seem like a bit of a nerd threat, though. But I'll give you credit for it. That's
well,
okay.
Not to him. Yeah, it means a lot to him. So,
okay.
So it kind of works.
It's like Anthony Michael Hall in The Breakfast Club. Why do you have a fake ID? So I can vote, obviously. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Most definitely 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you have any kind of a plumbing issue or electrical or heating or air conditioning, a generator, let's say, for example, or you're just not quite sure, you know, what's going on in your house, call Pete and they've been taking care of people for all of these things since 1969. I mean, it started with air conditioning in Panama City, quickly expanded in product lines, and also geographically came to Pensacola a long time ago, went east to Tallahassee, and then went farther west than Pensacola over into Baldwin County and into Mobile in the last couple of years. Good people putting in good products, 100% satisfaction guarantee on the installation. And one of the things that they want you to know about is not only they have, you know, quality workmanship, skilled plumbers, and, you know, your home, it works hard every day. The showers, the laundry are in constant demand, you know, delivering you the things that you need. You can prevent small plumbing problems before they start to become big disruptions. Get ready for smooth running back to school mornings with a $59 Peden plumbing check today. Peden, the pros you can trust. Find out more at Peden, PEDEN.com.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
Santa Rosa County voters, meet the candidates before you cast your ballot. Gulf Breeze News hosts a free candidate forum Tuesday at the Gulf Breeze Middle School cafeteria. Doors open at 5:30 for voters to meet the candidates. The forum begins at 6. Candidates for Congress, the Florida House, County Commission, and School Board have been invited. Doors at 5:30, meet the candidates, and the forum starts at 6. Free admission. Get informed with Gulf Breeze News at the Gulf Breeze Middle School cafeteria starting at 5:30 Tuesday night.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
I'm Dr. Isaac Williams, running for Escambia County School Board District 3. District 3 is asking for a change, and I agree. District 3 deserves a representative who will listen, communicate, and stay connected. I'm a retired military leader, a pastor, a community leader, and I'm ready to serve. I'll support teachers, strengthen schools, put students first, and always involve parents. I'm Dr. Isaac Williams. On August 18th, I would appreciate your vote.
Paid political ad by Dr. Isaac Williams, Escambia School Board District 3.
You know, sometimes you want answers.
Sometimes you just want something upbeat.
Either way, Meg's got you covered. Pet Talk, weekdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
What's up, Vincent?
The largest black hole I have ever encountered, Mr. Pizer.
That's one of my favorites. This never made it on the radio. It's a song called Get Up by Van Halen off of 5150. And, this is one of my favorite Van Halen songs because it just, yeah. Scream it, Sammy. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, small note. Yesterday when I was talking to Wes Moreno, and I might have mentioned it another time as well, the ordinance on the AI data center proposed, you know, not a ban. Don't call it a ban. It might be a ban. Just... the reiteration, essentially. There were a couple of references in there to state statutes that I could not find the end target of the reference. And I had mentioned it to Wes, and I had actually texted, Allison Rogers to ask her about that. And, you know, she's on vacation. I did not realize. Anyway, it turns out that's because the ordinances that have just passed this year have not gotten in. I don't know the term. I would say engrossed, but that's not really the right term. Added into the online statutes database, so that will come next year. So they are properly referenced to things that are in the SB 484 that just passed. So I figured there was an easy explanation, but I couldn't figure it out. So the lawyer had it right. Andrew McKay had it wrong, just FYI. 558, News Radio 92.3. I kind of just want to save this for a future transgressors, but... Did you hear the one about the guy who wants to bring a WNBA team to Nashville that will be all transgender women? No joke. I mean, it's a joke, but it's not a joke, right? So he said that, yeah, I mean, I want to get a franchise. I want to expand. I want to bring it to Nashville. We'll put all transgender women and we'll see if it makes any difference. Because, you know, in France right now, there's a transgender pro basketball player that used to be a guy who played and was sort of mediocre and now is, like, one of the superstars of the league. Shocker. Anyway, so this is Clay Travis, who is the founder of the OutKick founder. Anyway, he says, yeah, I'm going to do an all-trans WNBA team if they would give me a franchise. And I'll bring it to my hometown, Nashville, Tennessee. I'll pledge that 100% of my team will be trans. That will be men pretending to be women. Our entire coaching staff will be trans. We'll not lose a single game. There will probably be some games where we probably don't give up a single point. I will call this team the Nashville Balls, and I will become a dynastic sports owner. I will buy a WNBA franchise and play only men who identify as women. If that is not what they say is permitted, I will do it. I will buy a team. I will put my money where my mouth is. So, yeah. Well, no, that did not make our episode this week, but other things did.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3 WNRP Golf 3.